Edgar Cayce, the most renowned psychic of the 20th century, also considered the father of holistic medicine. Well, the deal is he gave a reading for an infant who was the reincarnation of Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, reborn. Past life regression therapist Joanne DiMaggio tells the story. The reading said that at one point he was Alexander the Great in a past life, and another point he was Thomas Jefferson. Let's go back and revisit Edgar Cayce. And my guest is somebody who knows a whole lot about past lives and Edgar Cayce, and the man who in this life was supposed to be the reincarnation of Thomas Jefferson, Joanne DiMaggio. Joanne, you did an incredible job. This is a ton of work. And it's an amazing story. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I thank you. Thank you for acknowledging that. It was a very long and sometimes frustrating journey, but I'm very proud of this book and how it turned out and how it's being perceived by people.
Part of it is you were also working with a living person and then people who represent the Cayce Foundation and working through that and making sure you had everybody's best interests at heart was going to be a challenge. How did you get started?
I like to think of myself as a reporter for the universe. So for me, and I'm a history buff, and of course my passion is past life work. So when I joined the ARE in 1987, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, which is the organization that Edgar Cayce founded, a friend of mine who was also a member said, oh, did you know that Mr. Cayce did a reading on this baby boy and said that he had been Alexander the Great and Thomas Jefferson? And I said, no. And she gave me his reading number, which is 1208. All the readings that were given for people, they were assigned a number to protect their anonymity. And so, but if you're a member, you could look up any, if you know the number, you could just go right into the readings and read what Cayce said. So I went in and looked at 1208, which is T.J. Davis's number, and read the reading and was absolutely floored because Cayce said that this child, this entity, this soul, could do for the world what Thomas Jefferson did for this country. And I thought to myself, what in the heck? Because I know he didn't do it. Well, what was his life, you know, like, what was his life like? What is that like to have such an auspicious reading done when you're 2 days old? You can't do anything about it at that point. It's all kind of on your parents' shoulders.
Right.
But what happened? Why didn't he fulfill that prophecy? And so for me, it became a source of interest for, you know, I thought a fascinating story. And so after that, I started to pursue trying to find him. And that took years. And it seemed like the people in Virginia Beach who knew him did not want me to meet him and really did not want a book about him to be published.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't understand why. I still don't understand why, because even after it's published, they're not too happy with me.
Wait. Let's go back.
Yeah.
For one thing,
sure.
There is a huge Cayce Adoration Society, okay? And for one of those, I mean, just looking at the chronology here on the website, starting out with 1890, an angel appears to him, and he discovered he's able to memorize his school books by sleeping on them. Okay, that's pretty extraordinary.
Right.
So this guy has tons of abilities that are absolutely beyond our belief. And so he has enigma and, you know, about him, this aura that people think, my gosh, he is above reproach. And yet this one he messed up on.
See, but I don't think he messed up. I don't think that at all. I know it may be premature now to talk about what I think that reading really meant, but I don't think it had anything to do with Thomas Jefferson, and I don't think it had anything to do with a global initiative or political initiative. Because if you read the book, TJ lived with the Cayces on and off for the first 8.5 years of his life, and Edgar became his mentor. The love between Cayce and TJ is apparent, or it should be apparent to anybody that looks at the pictures in the book or reads the letters that Mr. Cayce wrote.
Yeah.
And, you know, the time that they spent out on that pier where Cayce's teaching him about reading auras and about reincarnation and about karma and the creation story, all that time they spent together, Thomas Jefferson was not discussed. So I really believe that he was priming TJ to share with the world what was in those 14,000 readings that Casey gave, primarily the 2,000 readings that were life readings, because the other 12,000 were health readings.
And TJ read all 14,000, and he kept trying to get hired by the ARE, and they wouldn't hire him.
Yeah. They would not hire him, no. Mm-mm.
That wealth of knowledge, no. That up-close and personal tutelage mm-hmm. that he had, and when you read the letter to his 16-year-old son, you know, mm-hmm. obviously this guy's a black sheep. When you're reading the book, and I'm just going to say right now, the book, which Edgar Casey and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn, is an extraordinary tale, because what you have done, Joanne, you have put the pieces together of all the main players, from the Caseys, mm-hmm. Mr. and Mrs., to the couple who had the child, mm-hmm. and then some of his experiences and his connections. You've gone through meticulously and tried to piece together this puzzle of personalities and lives, current and past.
It was important for me that the reader hear these people's voice, that it wasn't me pontificating about what I believed happened, but that they tell their own story. So by reading the letters that they wrote to each other and the situations that arose during this time period, the book took me eight years to write it. And that was me traveling back and forth to Virginia Beach to work with Karen Davis, who's an angel. Karen is related to TJ through marriage. She's married to his cousin. And she was in the Edgar Casey Archives and the Edgar Casey Foundation, and worked with me to bring me the files. Once I got written permission from TJ to go into his file, she brought out the files, painstakingly brought them out to me one at a time. And I had to wear white gloves, and I had to just very gingerly turn the pages. And if I saw something interesting, I had to stop, take my gloves off, make a notation on my laptop, put the gloves back on, and continue. So I did this with his file, his parents' file, grandmother's file, his Aunt Gladys's file, and the letters to Mr. Casey, and anybody else that, if the number 1208 came up at any point in somebody's reading where they mentioned him or something, mm-hmm. I looked them up and I worked with them. Karen worked with me. Karen was acting as she wanted to make sure that the ARE's interests were covered,
yes.
The Casey family's interests were covered, and of course her own family, the Davis family. If she said to me, I don't think you should put that in, I did not put it in. And I trusted her completely. It was also important to both of us that this be based on historic documentation.
Yeah.
The last thing I wanted was somebody to come to me and go, I can prove that wasn't true. Or to tell me it's not true. And then I could turn around and say, well, I could prove that it is true because here it is in black and white. So, that's why it took as long as it did. And I must have rewritten it 6-7 times. I don't even remember. And I had interviews with TJ. You know, he and I are friends. And I did interviews with him. I set up some conversations for him to share with other ARE members and recorded those. So it was really, at times it was a labor of love. At times it was enormously frustrating. But I wanted to lay out chronologically what his life was like. What were the socioeconomic conditions in Virginia Beach at the time he was born? You know, they're coming out of the Depression, heading into World War II. That had a tremendous impact on his parents. And his parents had their own issues. They were both gamblers. They were both alcoholics. And he knew, his soul knew coming in, they did not want a baby. That was the last thing. His whole goal was to get to Edgar Casey. You know, how he got, you know, he said, you know, well, I looked down, and by the time I looked in on Casey, he was already too old to have children. Then I thought, I'll come through my Aunt Gladys Davis being Casey's secretary, but she wasn't married or having children. Then he thought, I'll come in through Gladys's brother, Boyd, and his wife, Berlin. Uh-huh. They won't want me, right? And they didn't. And so he ended up getting to Gladys, and then through Gladys, he got to Mr. Casey. So it's actually genius level thinking.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay.
On the part of that soul.
We're going to take a quick break. I want to come back with more of that genius level, because that's what is so fascinating about these connections that are here. Edgar Casey and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn. This is past life stuff, present life stuff, and the power of one soul to impact an entire community with just one little wish. I want to be next to him. And here he is, Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, First, a little backstory. Edgar Cayce, known as the Sleeping Prophet, I remember reading books about him in my grandmother's library, along with Fate magazine. I would park myself there and go through all of her esoteric books on mediums and the occult, the obscure stuff, mysteries. I loved all that, ghosts, you name it. I remember the stories about him and how incredible he was. He was considered to be the greatest 20th century psychic in America, and he gave more than 14,000, according to the information, 14,000 psychic readings while in a hypnotic trance. So he has an incredible backstory that we're not going to get into. What we're going to go from was a prophecy that he gave to a two-year-old. Edgar Cayce and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson, Reborn.
TJ has said to me over and over, he said, Joanne, all of mankind's answers to questions are in those readings, if people would just stop and actually read them.
Joanne DiMaggio, when you got into the last break and talking about, he looked down and said, there's so-and-so and there's so-and-so. Well, the one little piece of the puzzle that complicated things was the couple he chose had a huge list of karma that they were working through, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, they just did not want to have it. They had, their marriage was rocky from the beginning. The letters that you see that Cayce was working overtime to try to keep them together, trying to convince them that the soul that was going to come through them was of great importance to the world, and that they needed to do certain things to educate him in a certain way, raise him in a certain way, and, you know, long and short of it is they didn't do it. You know, Cayce did all that he possibly could, but that was not his child. It was not his, and the same thing with Gladys. That's her nephew, but it wasn't her biological child, so she could not make decisions for his future. That was up to his parents. And so, you know, that's why his life went in a whole different direction after Cayce died. You know, he knew what he was capable of. Everybody at the ARE knew who he was. I mean, like, he would say, you know, all the people who came to visit Cayce, many of them had famous past lives, and they knew who he was. He knew who they were. They used to go around and pat him on the head, and they would look for signs of Thomas Jefferson to blossom forth, you know. And it did on many an occasion. When TJ was 3 days old, 3 days, 3 years old, he started reciting the Declaration of Independence to Edgar, and he told him, he said, you know, I wrote that. Well, he's 3 years old.
Yeah.
And so other things came up. One of the interesting things, Wendy, is that people now, especially here, I live in Charlottesville, Virginia, which is the home of Thomas, the original Thomas Jefferson,
mm-hmm.
And the current Thomas Jefferson. And there are a lot of would-be Thomas Jeffersons here, let me tell you. And they were not too happy. One in particular said, I did a disservice to humanity by writing this book because I didn't acknowledge these other Thomas Jeffersons.
And
he went off on a tangent about the soul splitting and going into multiple bodies, which I won't go into now.
Yes, yeah.
But anyway, that's, the book isn't really about Thomas Jefferson. So
no.
Sort of a moot point, you know.
No.
It's about free will. It's about,
yes,
you know, the possibilities that are laid out before you. And like Cayce said, you know, you really can't fool me. I've done enough of these readings to know, you know, that they're truthful. But what you do with this information is totally up to you. So I never, ever see it as, oh, Cayce said he was going to do for the world what Jefferson did for this country, and he didn't do it, therefore Cayce was wrong. Oh, no, 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 that is not the case at all. I don't believe, as a matter of fact, in studying Cayce for 34 years, I don't know a time when he was wrong. I mean, there may have been, but I don't know of any. And, you know, I really think that there was a lot more to this than just the incarnation of our third president.
So, well, that's the thing about TJ, is he also, with his up close and personal, Cayce died when he was 9 years old, is that right? Or,
right.
Okay, all right. So he didn't get
then,
that,
yeah.
That didn't get that second life reading that might have changed everything.
Exactly.
What I did see from the story, the timeline of TJ, is that there are several indications, like even the Alexander the Great, when he's kind of college years and traveling overseas and going mm-hmm. from country to country, just, you know, on a whim, choosing the countries, mm-hmm. and then told later on that the pattern that he chose and the places he went to actually mirrored the trajectory of Alexander the Great when he went on his march to conquer you know, that era. It was like,
right.
How did he do that? Well, there's that memory, that past life memory. And then the Casey thing, saying that Thomas Jefferson played a part. He's in school. I can't remember if he's in preschool. This to pass on the 10th grade. He had been loafing, you know. It was hard. He said you couldn't tell teachers they were wrong. And everything he knew with some of the stuff that was being presented, well, it wasn't right. So he was basically bored. And he, however, had to pass a class to be able to get to 10th grade. And so he decided to just write free-for-all. And what came to mind, explain, because you're the one who did the work on this. Explain what happened there.
Well, he had a history test to pass in order to be promoted to the next level, the next grade level. And when he got, it was all essay. And when he got the question in front of him, he said, he knew he couldn't answer that. And he said, well, what am I going to do? So he sort of went into this meditation. And he just decided he was going to write out the Declaration of Independence and the Statute for Religious Freedom in Virginia. And then he signed about 10 different names of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, people he called, a couple of my friends. I signed their names to this. And then he turned it into a teacher, and he said, here, this is all I know about history. You can pass me, fail me, whatever you want to do. Well, they were absolutely outraged. And, you know, they said, this is ridiculous, and they suspended him from school. And yet, they couldn't figure out how he did it, because he was sitting right in front of them.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote the whole thing out verbatim. You know, how do you do that if you know nothing about history? And so they ended up passing him,
reluctantly,
scratching their heads.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Get out of here. You'll be somebody else's problem, you know, next time around. But, yeah, he did not. It's not that he didn't have a love of learning. He did, but he just found the whole thing ridiculous because he was living in a whole different atmosphere.
Yeah.
When you grow up in the Casey household, can you imagine what that life is like? He had no idea that the other kids did not see people being levitated or see fairies in the garden or hearing Michael the Archangel bellowing in the house, you know. I mean, they didn't sit around the table talking about reincarnation and the creation story and having friends manifested on the pier playing a violin, you know. I mean, it was just a different lifestyle, and it really messed him up quite a bit because, you know, how do you fit into so-called mainstream when your formative years are spent pretty much at the foot of the master learning all these esoteric truths? How do you then, you know, how do you be normal? He said instead of thinking about baseball, he would lie there and thinking about Atlantis.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
it was a whole different world for him. So, would you consider him now eccentric and a recluse and all that? Yeah. But, you know, the things that he learned and the things that he saw were just absolutely enchanting. And to hear him talk about them, he brings them to life. He still has that same charisma that I imagine Jefferson had. And he still commands or can command the undivided attention of people. When I used to host him for some of these ARE programs, people hung on his every word.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing. So that, you know, that unseen sort of power and charisma and ability to draw people to him is one of his greatest strengths. And I really truly believe that Casey knew that about him, saw that in him, and knew that he could draw people because of the Jefferson connection. And then once he got them in and people were listening, hey, this guy used to be Thomas Jefferson, let's listen to what he has to say. And then he starts to tell them about the esoteric truths that are in the Casey readings. You know, I mean, he's got an undivided audience there. And I think that, I really think that's what this is all about. And because TJ has said to me over and over, he said, Joanne, all of mankind's answers to questions are in those readings.
Yes.
If people would just stop and actually read them.
And there's a couple of things in there about health that he follows. Another thing that goes back into what the belief system that he developed. I want to get into this. We have to take a quick break, though, and we're going to come back. There's so much content with him that he is extraordinary. I think he was before his time, and I think the stuff that he has to speak about now is absolutely earth-shaking. Stick around. Edgar Cayce and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson, Reborn, Wendy's Coffee House. Okay, picking up where we left off, Joanne DiMaggio, Edgar Cayce and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn. One thing he really didn't care for in that past life of Thomas Jefferson was that he owned slaves. And this was one thing it was like, this doesn't sit. In the term of the soul, he came back and said, I can fix this one. Chalk that one off.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the one thing he has said repeatedly that bothers him about the Jefferson life is the slavery issue. No, I've known him for a long time, and I can tell you he does not have a racist bone in his body. And just the opposite, there are a lot of stories either in the book of the way he treated other people, not just African-Americans, but anybody that he met from another country when he did all of his travels. He just saw totally believed in the equality of everyone.
He had an incredible ability to keep himself level and yet explore and experiment and beyond his own lifetime, do some karma work that I think maybe other people aren't looking at when they're looking at the human. They're looking at, the black sheep. But the soul is exploring and evolving through these encounters.
Yeah, his life now is definitely karmic payback for some of the issues from the Jefferson life. I don't see too much from Alexander's life. He'll tell you, he said, I don't think Alexander was so great. Because all he did is go around killing people, So he's not proud of that lifetime. Because TJ is so gentle that he'll pick up frogs on people's driveways and move them over so they don't get run over. When he was in Greece, I was amazed at that story about how he got to Thessaloniki, which the fellow that he met at the airport who convinced him to go with him to Greece, because TJ was in Luxembourg and didn't want to stay there, and he couldn't read the sign at the airport. He didn't really know where he wanted to go. And this NYU student comes up to him and says, hey, why don't you come home with me to Greece for a few days and get acclimated, and then you can move on from there. Well, as it turns out, his father was the mayor, and he was living in this house that had once been Aristotle's home. And Aristotle, of course, was Alexander's teacher. So it was full circle. And then the young man that met him and brought him to Greece with him had been Hephaestion, which was Alexander's best friend. So here he was surrounded by people from that lifetime. So synchronistic type of events happened to him all the time. But he made note of it. Or if he didn't notice it, his Aunt Gladys did. And she
documented everything.
She did. God bless her.
Which is wonderful. I mean, that's where this history comes from. It's meticulous that she chose to write these things down. There was one in there. You mentioned the frogs. I like the story where he was a young child and his mom dumped him somewhere. Mom forgot that he had a birthday, apparently. And okay, so he and this other child who happened to have a birthday on the same day went to play and had a wonderful time, and the dog showed up. So he started feeding the dogs cake.
Birthday cake.
Yeah. Yes.
This was on a Native American property that his mother left him in the cabin or whatever she rented. And she went off with her girlfriend to have a good time someplace in town. This is in New Mexico. So he started playing with this little boy and gave those what he thought were a pack of, a bunch of puppies, basically, but they were wolves. and he does have an affinity, a natural affinity for animals. And where he lives now is pretty remote. He's on a 40-acre plot of land up on a mountain, and the animals just find their way to his door.
That's the thing about this, the soul. The soul, there's a connection that speaks for him. Hearing his words, his language, the way he presents things, I think he does a great service to the foundation. I really, reading, especially going back to that, the letter he wrote to the 16-year-old son, extraordinary insight that comes, and loving insight that comes in there. Basically saying, the drug things aren't the way to go. And there are some other things that he puts in there. You have a sense of character that comes through that can only be linked to Mr. Cayce, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You hit it right on the head. And it's unfortunate that people didn't take the time to see him on that other level. I've seen him on both sides of him,
mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, the things that he's been criticized for, his many shortcomings, as we all have. But I've also had the privilege of having conversations with him. It's becoming harder to do it now because he's starting to fail in his health. But the conversations that we've had, I wouldn't trade those for anything in the world. If I had to be alone and, you know, if it was just me and on an island, I would choose to be with him. When he and I talk, he wants to do those things that Casey wanted him to do. He has this inner desire to do them, but he doesn't know how to manifest them. And he relies on other people to set the stage for him, but then he doesn't step up to the plate. He'll get shy about it, or he'll back off about it, or, you know, he'll be a no-show or something like that. But yet, underneath it all, if you could really have a conversation with him, it is absolutely fascinating and life-changing, really.
Yeah.
And I think he still has a lot that he can give. And, you know, I'm hoping the book is opening a door to enable him to do that. But, you know, our time might be getting a little short at this point.
To talk with him if he's available, just because anything on audio goes the world over. All right. This is the one beautiful thing. It's like radio in the old days. Audio. People don't all over the world have video. They don't have YouTube. They don't have access. It's too expensive for one thing, but audio lives. And so if you can get whatever he's doing down, there's a presence that will be there in his voice. The other thing too is explaining in your book, you know, the way that he ducked and covered, even though you had invited him to be a guest. I think you were making a presentation at the Unity Church, and he showed up and was there, and they left very quickly, and he apologized and said, or it was an event, and then he saw you later at church. But he said, "That's what I do. I'm a recluse. I kind of, you know, it's a habit." But, you know, he reaches out and steps back because he second guesses himself. And once he gets going, though, then he just unleashes, and it's just brilliant. The light comes out.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. That's why there was just a window of opportunity that I had where I did about six, I think. What we called them, conversations with TJ, and I invited ARE people to come, and we had groups of maybe 15, 20 at a time, and they were all kind of circled around him like he was this great storyteller. He at first did not want to do it because he hadn't talked about his life with Casey all these years. I mean, because he just felt like, what's the use of it?
Right.
You know, nothing ever came of it. And so he kept quiet. He didn't want people to think he was a weirdo. you know, oh, you think you're Thomas Jefferson, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But I told him, I said, you're going to be among like-minded people who love you and who will not have a negative view of you at all. They'll embrace you. So at first he came and, you know, he's sitting there and he goes, well, you know, Edgar Casey said I was Thomas Jefferson, you know, and then he would retreat. He said it real fast, then he would retreat, and everybody's looking at him like, yeah, and, you know, nobody thought it was weird. Nobody thought he had two heads. And once he knew that, once he knew he was in a group of welcoming, loving souls, he opened up, and he just loved telling stories about himself and Mr. Casey. For TJ, it's all about Edgar Casey. It's not about Thomas Jefferson, and he continues to pursue that even now.
In the next break, let's bring some of that out, because you heard those stories that he has, and that's where I think the gold is. That's where he basically had a chance to fine-tune and temper all that information that he gleaned when he was young and in his formative years. He had the gold mine right there, and he was mining it. So let's try that in the next break. Edgar Casey and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn. What he gathered is worth its weight in gold. Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House. Joanne DiMaggio, Edgar Casey and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn. The story isn't about his reincarnation. It's more about what he learned while he spent time with Mr. Casey, because that's when he learned how to read auras. That's when he learned how to see fairies. That's when he saw an actual levitation performed by Casey. What an incredible environment for a kid. More about who he is now.
He's just the culmination of those initial 8.5 years studying with Edgar Casey from the time he was 2 years old. They went out on the pier and they you know, Casey taught him how to read an aura. He would tell him about looking at the colors around the trees, and that he could tell if the tree was going to be healthy or it was dying based on the colors. And, you know, he taught him how to do that. He told him the reincarnation story. He told him the creation story, which TJ says to him is still the most beautiful story that Casey ever told him. And he said if people understood the creation story better, we would not have half the problems that we have today. He would help Casey in the asparagus garden. And one time he was out there, and all of a sudden these little buzzy stick figures were all around him, and it scared him. He ran out. There's a picture of him. I think he's about 18 months old. He's running like crazy out of the asparagus garden. And Casey said to him, "Oh no, those are fairies. Those are elementals. They won't hurt you. Make friends with them." Mm-hmm. And he learned to communicate with them through sound, and he did that at a very early age. He would complain to Edgar about, you know, there's nobody here for me to play with. Everybody's big and I'm little. And Mr. Casey said, "Well, I'll do something about that." And then all of a sudden, one day he goes out on the pier and he hears violin playing, and he turns around and hears this little girl. And Mr. Casey said, "That's Stefanella. She'll be your playmate." And TJ said that at first he thought she was a neighbor child, but then he realized that when she would get really, really get into her music, he could put his hand through her. So she was, you know, gossamer in a way. He saw Casey levitate someone. There was a family from India that came. Casey related that story to TJ in terms of erecting the pyramids and how, you know, the whole way of doing it. He used that as an example and told TJ to sit at the top of the stairs and watch what was going to happen in their living room. And sure enough, he did see him levitate someone. He saw firsthand a lot of the lessons that Casey taught him. And he said, you know, if you were to over listen to our conversation, like if you were to eavesdrop on us, he said, you would think that these two people are like 10,000 years old. He says, because we were 10,000 years old and we were talking to each other. And Casey could read his mind, and he saved his life a couple of times because TJ did not do well by water. And a couple of times he almost fell in the lake and drowned. And, you know, Casey intervened. Even while he was giving a reading, he stopped and told Gladys, you know, you better go get tea. He's out. He's going to fall into the water. And so there were all kinds of stories like that of what he calls a very enchanted childhood.
What was their relationship, soul purpose-wise?
Well, I think it was he wanted to be together with him again. They'd been together in many, many, many lifetimes. And as to the purpose of it, I still maintain that TJ was to carry on Casey's work. He couldn't do the work that Casey does. In other words, he couldn't go into a trance and go up to source and get information for people and do readings. And actually, Casey told him that when he was a child, because TJ used to go into the vault where Aunt Gladys was working, and he'd fall asleep on the bags of mail. And you know, there's a story about Casey would walk in there and he said, "You could sleep on that all you want. You'll still never know what's in them the way I do." So he did, you know, when Casey was giving a reading, TJ didn't go out to play. Then he was sitting in the library in their home and he was actually going through a reading. Gladys talked about how weird it was for a child his age to sit through a reading or to read the readings because they're not easy reading.
Yeah.
The language that's used in them is difficult to understand.
Yeah.
And yet he you know, he read all about, and the people that he met, all of those souls that were drawn to Edgar Casey, that were so lucky to be alive when Casey was alive, because, you know, there hasn't been anybody like him since he passed in 1945.
No.
And so to have that, a house full of people that where reincarnation was discussed as if it were an everyday thing. It was just a magical, magical life for a child, and he was being primed. I still think, you know, Mr. Casey was pouring wisdom into the body of that little child
mm-hmm.
with the hope that someday he was going to share that with successive generations.
I agree.
And as I said, that's something he could still do.
The language that you have included in the book gives me a hint that this man is full of that wisdom poured into him from Casey, and plus his own tempering, his own weathered hard knocks and all of that that, you know, that us humans go through.
Yeah, he was pretty much a lost soul after Casey died. When Casey died, it was like nobody wanted him. He was thrown from pillar to post. Gladys had all her hands full just trying to save the ARE and save the readings. She just couldn't devote time to him. His parents still didn't want him. got sent to his grandmother in Ohio, and then he got bounced to an aunt and uncle, and then he got bounced to somebody else. He said his life went from applause to yawn.
The crucial thing was he was supposed to get the Second Life reading when he was 13.
Right.
It sounds like that has haunted him. And I think Casey's right there with him. All he has to do is relax and and do it again. And he's got it. He was ahead of the curve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he says to me, I know I have to come back. There's things I have to do. And I go, yeah, you and me both. So.
Yeah. That's just part of it.
I'll write volume two.
I do think he was doing his soul's work, and it just didn't, people had the expectations that we do in the linear plane of it's going to be exactly like Thomas Jefferson, and he's going to be a politician. And I agree, your take on this, that is not what it was about.
Yeah, and he's working out a lot of karma. Jefferson died in bankruptcy, didn't handle money well, and TJ is living pretty much in abject poverty, and I've never heard him complain. And that's the law of grace. So I think that he's transmuting any karma that he may have had with Jefferson. And if that's the purpose of this life is to get that behind him, then let him do that. Well, I mean, who are we to judge, right?
It isn't about possession. It's about presence. And he brings that 110%. I wasn't sure what to think about the book when I saw the title. I thought, oh, and I was reading it thinking, oh, these parents, oh my gosh, this is a train wreck.
Oh, I know.
And then at the same time, you know, knowing that, well, what he got from Casey is just absolutely solid gold. So it's there that this stuff shines. And then, you know, to have that hanging over his head, creating all of this tension and turmoil.
Yeah, I think that the area that he's most disappointed in is his education. Because Casey had him, really wanted him to go to that high mowing school, which was a Rudolf Steiner school in New Hampshire. And had it all set up. The woman who founded the school, Mrs. Eula Emmett, had been an assistant to Aristotle. Mm. And, of course, Aristotle taught Alexander. So Casey's thinking, I'll send him back to his original teacher here, and we'll just keep going here, right?
Yeah.
And Casey did everything he could to get him into that school. And he was all set, ready to go, had their train ticket. Gladys was going to take him. He was all packed. And at the last minute, his mother changed her mind.
Yeah.
And that was the saddest day of, I mean, if you read the letters that Casey wrote to Mrs. Emmett, I mean, it's sad. And that could have been another turning point for him. And he sees that as the point where his soul took a completely different trajectory than what Casey had hoped it would be his future.
And so you come back to what did TJ accomplish and listening to the language that he uses now. And the way that he approaches the stories of being with Casey, there are people who could learn from him and absorb just as much and in a positive way.
Oh, yeah.
I really appreciate all the work because this was a tremendous labor of love that you did. And you had a lot of help along the way, even when you were ready to check out and it said,
I felt like Casey and Gladys were on either side of me, you know. And when you think about it, all the materials that I used, it was like Gladys tucked it all away in a file, knowing like 70 years later, a reporter for the universe was going to come and take it and write about it and set the record straight, which is what I wanted to do for him.
It's definitely extraordinary, all the pieces that fit in this. And it's incredibly inspiring. So I really appreciate the work you've done. I appreciate all of the little helpers, unseen and seen along the way, who put this little package together. So thank you.
I'm really proud of it. Thank you.
Do we just go to your website?
Well, the book is on Amazon. So are my other books. And if you want to learn more about me, it's joannedimaggio.com. Besides being a writer, I am a past life researcher and therapist. And so I do regressions via Zoom. And so if anybody's interested in pursuing that, I'd be happy to work with them. Read about that online, and they can even book an appointment if they so choose to do.
I think now you've got their attention.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Wendy's Coffee House, thanks for listening.